Hello, today we are going to talk about my new podcast. The title of the talk is Mind Matter Interaction, a Conjecture. I've been writing about this material for the last so many years. In fact, it started in 1977, and I have written many articles on this, plus I have dealt this topic in depth in my two books, Nature of Human Thought and Exploring the Mind of God. But somehow, I was not very satisfied with the thing that I had written. And so, I have gone back and reworked this talk and have put in more material. And I hope you will enjoy listening to it. Throughout the history of human civilization, there have been large number of instances where so-called miracles have been formed. These have included levitation, production of material things from thin air, physical healing, etc. The nature of these miracles is the same, irrespective of the religion and different civilizations. Some of their accounts have been exaggerated, but a large body of information shows remarkable consistency in their nature and reporting, though the producers of such miracles have always claimed that it is God or higher forces and entities who use them as medium and hence perform them. However, I feel that these events have come because of the interaction of human thought with gravity and material surroundings. After all, a thought produced by a physical brain must be physical in nature and hence governed by certain scientific laws. Thus, a curiosity arose about which laws of science operate to make these things happen. This essay or this talk is my humble attempt in trying to understand them. I have been exploring and writing about these issues since 1977, though the desire to understand them started from my childhood when I became interested in spirituality and did a lot of meditation and other things. These ideas since 1977 were initially written in a diary form, and I put that diary on the internet and then distilled in my first book, The Nature of Human Thought, which was published in 2004, and its second edition was published in 2010. Recently, I have written another book called Exploring the Mind of God, or How Technology Guided by Spirituality Can Produce Happiness. This book extends and explores mind-matter interaction issues further. However, I have now put all these things which I wrote since 1977 into this essay and podcast together to make it more comprehensive. Most of the times, scientists scoff at these conjectural ideas and term them pseudoscience. However, if it in early 1800s, somebody had told mankind about Einstein's relativity theory and the space-time continuum, people would have had the same reaction as today's so-called hardcore scientists about mind-matter subjects. Thus, the black magic of today is often the science of tomorrow. The spirit of science encourages our imagination to flower and to conjecture, and the only validity of such conjectures is a proof from experiments. It is my firm belief that we should have an open mind about mind-matter interaction and try to figure out how it could be possible. And this podcast is one attempt towards that. So the genesis of idea came in 1977. In the late 1977, I was walking through a thick pine grove in Gainesville, Florida, USA, at University of Florida, where I was studying, when suddenly a thought came out of blue that gravity and human thought may be related. I was doing my PhD in solar thermal utilization at the university, and I was not thinking about this relationship at all, or anything connected to gravity at that time, and hence was taken aback by the suddenness and intensity of this thought. I also felt that it must be true since it came with such a force. The power of this thought was such that I spent next 3-4 months researching it and in the process neglected my PhD research. I also felt that the thick pine grove acted as an antenna for getting such a thought, and I have written an essay and couple of essays on how trees act as antenna for such a thought, and they are like spiritual antennas. The event also propelled me to start investigating the area of mind-matter interaction and other aspects of spirituality. In fact, whatever little I have thought of and written on this subject in the last 45 years was triggered by this single thought. Though I understood intuitively the import of this thought at that time, which means the human thought and gravity are related, but even today, somehow the relationship between deep human thought and gravity has remained elusive. However, it now appears that there may be a light at the end of tunnel, and this podcast is my humble attempt to show how human thought and gravity may be related. But before we do that, first of all, we'll have to try to understand what is the nature of human thought. It is an accepted fact that a thought is produced when a brain neurons fire. There are close to 80 to 100 billion neurons in the brain. The exact figure is not known. And for a simple thought like what is the color of flower, open the door, etc., etc., a small portion of neurons in the brain fire, but in deep concentration, leading to samadhi and sanyam. Sanyam is a word which was coined by Patanjali in his Patanjali Yoga Sutras, and it means combination of concentration and contemplation on a single object or a subject for a long time. When you do the sanyam, almost all the neurons fire to produce a deep thought. Thus, a difference between deep and shallow thought is its intensity and duration. It is also interesting to note that the activation of neural pathways triggers firing of neurons. This activation is triggered either by signals from sense organs or stimulation of certain memory space in the brain. Firing neurons help them to communicate with each other, and during this communication, the electrical signal from a neuron is converted into chemicals or neurotransmitters and transmitted across the synaptic cleft to another neuron, where it is again converted to electrical signal for the onward journey. We'll talk about some of these things now. Synaptic cleft is a very tiny space of about 20 nanometers between an axon and a dendrite, and is a place where two neurons exchange information via neurotransmitters, or NT. A neuron has three parts. At one end is a dendrite, which accepts neurotransmitters from other neurons. There's a central nucleus, which is the heart of the neuron, and a long nerve fiber called axon, whose end, or a synapse, releases the neurotransmitters for transmitting to another neuron. And large number of these neurons connected like this, in which they communicate with each other, forms a neural pathway. Why did nature produce this type of diode-based communication system, where the electrical signal from the neuron is first converted into electrical, chemicals, neurotransmitters, and transmitted through the synaptic cleft and again converted back into electrical signal? So, as I explained, a neuron has the three parts. One is a central nucleus. Then there is a very long axon which connects through the synaptic synapses to the other neuron. And this is how the connection takes place. A possible answer for this riddle that I just explained could be that during this conversion In synaptic cleft, photons are produced, which are the signature of thought. Anytime a chemical reaction takes place, and naturally in this case, the production of neurotransmitters is one such reaction, it produces weak photons. This is the nature of chemical bond. All chemical bonds, when they either form a bond or the bonds are broken, the process produces photons. And these photons are in a different spectrum region from the weakest to the strongest. Weak photon production, which is in the far infrared region, was experimentally observed in the brain in the late 2010s, when scientists detected them being emitted during the firing of neurons and the transfer of neurotransmitters across the synaptic cleft. Scientists are still not sure in what way the brain uses these photons, but speculate that somehow they may help in increasing communication between various parts of the brain. And this is the information that I took, and I therefore conjectured on a totally new thing about how the thought is produced. And therefore, I conjecture that these photons from a large number of neural pathways synchronize via a nonlinear process to form a three-dimensional hologram, which we can call a thought. Hence, the origin of thought probably occurs in synaptic clefts. Each thought, however, is a result of the activation of a unique set of neural pathways, though we still do not know how many neural pathways are needed for it. In fact, the formation of such a unique neural pathways is the memory. So, neural pathways are the memory. Whenever the energy passes through these neural pathways, it forms a memory. And the way this energy passes through a set of neural pathways is a memory of that particular thing. So, neural pathways are the memory, and the neurons firing in these pathways produces a thought. So, thought and neural pathways or memory are interrelated. With practice and constant flow of electrical signals through these neural pathways, memory of that particular object also gets strengthened. And thus, when we do rote learning and continuously work or think about certain things, that helps in the increase of memory, because the neural pathways get strengthened. Now we talk about brain complexity and synchronization of thought photons. Just to give you a sense of complexity of the brain, let us look at the numbers of possible neural pathways in the brain. There are close to 80 to 100 billion neurons in the brain. Each neuron has many dendrites and axons, as we explained, which connects it to other neurons. And so recent scientific evidence also suggests that besides the neurons, another type of cells called glial cells take part in communication. Glial cells outnumber neurons by 9-to-1 and can modify the signals transmitted by each neuron. There are therefore estimates that 10 raised to power 15 synapses in the brain may be involved in communication. Thus, the number of different combinations for neural pathways and thought production are mind-boggling. That is the reason why human mind can generate millions and zillions of thoughts. It's one of the biggest creator of communication machine anywhere in the universe. However, the photons from each synapse must be synchronized with others to produce a stable thought structure. This synchronization takes place via a positive feedback type mechanism, so that each photon is influenced by others and is guided by an entity called I, or ego, or will, or sense of identity, etc., etc. Ego acts like a symphony director and helps provide the necessary energy and focus to maintain a given thought for a certain time. It also constantly compares it with signals from outside, those we receive through the senses, to give us a sense of reality. I have written quite a number of essays on ego, where it resides in the brain, basically it's in the frontal cortex or the front portion of the brain, and consists of different types of neurons called wing neurons, which are bigger neurons and communicate without the chemicals, so they can communicate very fast. But that is a different subject altogether, and I have talked about it and I have given a podcast on that. We still do not completely understand how ego or I can influence this process, but just like the music conductor who determines which part of the orchestra plays for how long, I or the ego decides how long a particular thought will remain in the vision field. And this process is called concentration. And it seems that it also exists in all other animals and life. So concentration is what gives the, and because the human brain, which is very big, the concentration is much, much more stronger than any other life. And it gives us the feeling and it gives the sense of humanness. With practice, concentration becomes stronger till a person can nearly make all the 80 to 100 billion neurons fire in a laser-like fashion for a long time on a single thought. This is the genesis of meditation or samadhi and results in sanyam, according to what sage Patanjali has written. And according to him, sanyam done on any subject results in its complete knowledge. This is also the basis by which all great discoveries in science, art, and any other human endeavor are made. They are all made by people who had a tremendous power of concentration, and when they focus their mind on a single subject or object for a very, very long time, then the nature reveals its truth and its complete secrets. In fact, the whole basis of Patanjali Yoga Sutras is to produce a powerful mind capable of producing a deep thought on any subject or object. Such a mind produces enlightenment for a yogi and helps in his or her liberation from the cycle of birth and death. This deep thought produced continuously also helps dissolve memory knots of the brain, since this activity requires increased number of neural pathways and hence the loosening of existing memories. Patanjali says that removing memory knots or sanskars makes the mind like a crystal, so that any object or subject occupies the whole brain. Or in other words, when memory knots are resolved, the processing power of the brain increases exponentially and allows the brain to focus on a single object or subject in a laser-like manner. Hence the reference to crystal-like clarity of the brain. The production of weak photons for thought formation could also be the reason why many yogis have experienced seeing white light during intense meditation. Similarly, the observation of white light by persons during near-death experience could be an outcome of nearly all the brain neurons firing during the final exit. So how thought and gravity interaction takes place? Now we have discussed what is thought, how it is synchronized to produce a stable structure. And now we'll talk about a little bit about the basis of thought and gravity interaction. According to Albert Einstein, gravity is nothing else but a curvature of space-time continuum, and hence geometric in nature. It is my conjecture that the structure of thought is also geometric, and hence it is possible that both gravity and thought are related at a deeper level. The relationship is also based on the idea that deep human thought is a very stable hologram and may interact with gravity. We'll talk about this deep human thought as a stable hologram in greater detail in the later on. According to the general theory of gravitation, light bends around massive bodies. This is one of the greatest discoveries of the gravitation. And that is why the light coming very close to the sun bends. This is because massive bodies distort the space-time matrix, and the shortest path for light travel is geodesic. Hence, life light appears to bend when it passes heavy bodies like sun. This was one of the great triumphs of Einstein's theory of gravitation. Since gravity bends light, we can conjecture by principle of equivalence, which was another great invention of Einstein, that light should also bend the space-time matrix. This is the line of thinking we will employ in our quest to find the relationship between deep human thought and gravity. Now I'll talk about how deep human thought, hologram, becomes extremely stable and forms a soliton. It is possible that the deep and extremely focused human thought, which leads to a samadhi, may act like a laser and could interact with space-time matrix in a non-linear manner to produce a soliton. What is a soliton? Soliton is a wave which can remain stable for almost infinite time and can travel to great distances without dissipating. These waves, or they are called sometimes as rogue waves, arise because of the non-linearity of the wave phenomena and have been observed in liquids, gases, optics, and even in space. The word soliton is apparently derived from solitary wave, which being stable, almost acts like a particle. Hence, soliton rhymes with electron. When the conditions are right and a critical threshold is achieved, then according to the catastrophe theory, soliton-type structure is formed. Thus, it can be conjectured that a thought which is an outcome of tremendous concentration for a very long time can form a soliton. Since thought solitons are very stable, it is tempting to think that they may form stable memories and may reside in knowledge space. Knowledge space, I have defined previously in my many articles, is a space which has very stable memories and is an outcome of deep concentration, emotional thought, etc. These memories could also be the basis of karma that is talked about in the Indian philosophy. Einstein's general relativity and gravitation theory has shown that light or photons is bent by heavy bodies. Since gravity field interacts with light, by principle of equivalence, light should also change it. Gravitation field theory also shows that a combination of energy and momentum can curve space-time matrix. Though photons are massless particles, they have energy and momentum, two important attributes for bending space-time matrix. Hence, light traveling through it should be able to change the matrix shape. However, the effect of photon for changing the shape is minuscule and is extremely difficult to measure since most of the photons have very little energy and momentum. However, it could be possible that high-intensity light should be able to deform it. Recently, some theoretical studies have shown the effect of lasers on space-time matrix deformation. Extrapolating on this idea, one can conjecture that laser-like thought hologram, soliton, may deform the space-time matrix just like a mass would do and produce mechanical effects. This could be the basis of mind-matter interaction. However, the mechanical effect may be very feeble. Nevertheless, these mechanical effects under certain conditions might be amplified, allowing the mind-matter interaction to become visible. This amplification could be explained by the science of resonance. All systems in the universe possess natural frequencies, and when these frequencies are reached, large-scale mechanical effects are observed. A classical example is a child on a swing. A slight push at the right time to the swing can make it go higher and higher. Similarly, certain notes played on musical instruments can shatter wine glasses. In the same manner, some of the modern bridges were destroyed when marching steps of the soldiers matched the natural frequency of the bridge. All these effects show that an exceedingly small force can create large mechanical changes when the natural frequencies of the system are reinforced by a small mechanical force. This is the genesis of the butterfly effect, generally described in chaos theory, and is an outcome of non-linear dynamics of the system. The butterfly effect simply states that a butterfly may fly in Brazil, Amazon, and its effect will be felt in Beijing. A small force somewhere gets amplified drastically through the non-linear mechanism and can be seen hundreds and thousands of miles further on. Thus, a deep thought hologram, soliton, may somehow interact with space-time matrix in a non-linear way to affect large-scale mechanical changes. We still, however, do not know how this takes place. This process, however, may be able to explain the movement of physical objects by thought, called as a psychokinesis, and poltergeist phenomena, where the presence of a troubled person brings in abrupt movements of the physical objects like stones, furniture, etc. Generally, the troubled person is capable of very strong emotional thoughts. Since we have now explained how the thought, stable thought can be produced, how can it interact with the matter and gravity, it is also tempting to talk about how a thought can be transmitted. There have been many cases where you are sitting, staring at somebody, and suddenly that person feels that somebody is staring at you, so their signal has gone and affected his brain. And the same thing happens when there's a danger and you sense the danger. There is no physical process, but a signal comes to your brain, and that signal is what is called the deep thought. This interaction of thought hologram with space matrix may also explain how thought could be transmitted. After their formation, shallow thoughts dissipate rapidly within the brain. However, a focus, the deep thought may have enough energy to be transmitted. Once the threshold energy of the thought is reached by intense concentration, it can form a soliton, as we have discussed before, and can be transmitted outside the brain. Also, depending upon the energy of the thought, it may also form dissipative solitons, which means very shortly after it leaves the brain, it will dissipate and may be stable for some time. This could be the basis of signal we receive when somebody thinks about us or there's a danger to us. However, only a deep thought soliton stays stable in the space-time matrix for a long time and could be a part of the permanent memory in knowledge space. And this is also a thought which can be transmitted for very long distances. Soliton, being a very powerful signal and product of a very focused thought, also has an effect on minds of people who interact with it. This results in mind-bending experience that people have often observed when they come in contact with a very powerful mind. This could also be the reason why most abductees, or the people who were taken on the flying saucers or the UFOs, felt very frightened when they encountered alien beings. They felt as if their whole life was sucked out. Such encounters with alien beings is also able to wipe out the memories of encounters in the abductees, since they interact with the recipient brains in a very powerful manner. This has been observed by people who were abducted and has been written very nicely in John Mack's book called Encounters. This is also written in Patanjali Yoga Sutra, when he said that a yogi not only can read others' mind, but can also take command of his or her body. And this is also, again, a very deep thought, can simply penetrate somebody's mind and take care of it. I also feel that this soliton thought wave may be responsible for Mahasamadhi, or people or great rishis and enlightened souls who leave their body at will, guided by gravity of celestial bodies like sun and stars. And this Mahasamadhi is possible through this soliton thought wave method. Naturally, production of a soliton for final exit requires a tremendous concentration and energy on the part of a yogi. We still do not understand how this happens, but in modern times, there has been an example of Swami Vivekananda who left his body by will during Samadhi. In fact, very detailed write-up has been written about how he left his body and by his disciples. Sometimes it seems that the physical structure of brain and body is required to reach the stage of highly nonlinear thought, and once the soliton is achieved, the body's function is over and the liberation of being from the cycle of birth and death results. Sage Patanjali says that this stage could be achieved by Dharma Megh Samadhi. Dharma Megh is basically a spiritual cloud samadhi, and is a very interesting thing, and I have written a little bit on it when I have explained the deep science in Patanjali Yoga Sutras. It is also very tempting to speculate that the production of thought like soliton artificially and its interaction with space-time matrix may provide a possible mechanism for teleportation and a propulsion for overcoming gravity and help in intergalactic space travel. This is very speculative in nature, but it's something to think about. And thank you very much for listening to this podcast, and I'll greatly appreciate if you send me your feedback on it. Thank you very much.